welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
I just noticed I don't sound like Marge Simpson this week.
No, you don't. You sound
that's kind of great.
Sounding more like Aaron Ryan this week.
I know it.
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape can get you pretty much anything you want in the way of John Deere products. They can get you tractors, loaders, implements, mowers, you name it, they got it. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And mowing season's just about over. What are we, 90 degrees today?
They wanted to, at the state level, they wanted to do no-mow May.
No-mow May?
Yeah. They wanted nobody to mow in May.
Oh.
I know. I was like, what?
Really?
No-mow May? What does that mean?
When can you
mow? Yeah, people were like, if they don't mow in May, there's going to be really big fires later. And everybody's like, oh, okay, that's a dumb idea. God. Yeah, so if you hear that they're doing no-mo May, yeah, that...
May is your last shot at getting everything
that got walked
in
back.
Shape. Yeah, for the old fire season.
Yeah, how big of a dunce are you, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't mow. Let it get tall and dry. Don't water it either.
Yeah.
Because you
could go stomp it down.
No fire's ever starting to dry grass.
No.
That's stupid. Who would believe that?
No.
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of that going around. Who would believe that? Hey, you know, just as an FYI, it is May 15th, 2022. And so they just had the vote, the very unpopular vote. It was unpopular no matter where you went on the Ukraine bill.
Yeah.
And I'll post some stuff on the page today so that you can see it. For those of you that are on my email list, it's the same stuff, so don't knock yourselves out. But when you look at the detail of really what happened with that bill, the difficulty is the Biden administration sent a whole bunch of munitions to Ukraine, and the recent bill actually replaces those. So we're not sending a check.
Replaces ours.
Right. Replaces our munitions. And there's a factory in Huntsville, Alabama, that's going to be working for like the next 5 years. They just funded 5 years of operation. They make, I'm going to get it wrong, Stinger missiles or something. Anyway, we have to have that stuff on hand. And whether you think it was a good idea to give it to the Ukrainians or not, they did and left us without. So a lot of that is going to our own defense industry. And the aid-type stuff, a lot of that's going to be run through the State Department. Got opinions there, as do a lot of people. Not the greatest thing, but bottom line is a check did not go over to the Ukrainians for $40 billion so they could just, whatever they do with it, wash it back through the Biden's family trust. That's not actually how that worked. I would be happy to post the detail. I'll do that while we're talking to Dr. Chen. And I wanted to let you know, too, that next week we have Marcos Rodas. And he has been involved with Turning Point and just a ton of groups. Let's see. Hold on. I'm not on that page. I was on the wrong page. It was a pretty long list, too. It's kind of interesting. He's been on OANN, Daily Caller, Fox, Turning Point, PragerU. He works on campus reform. He works on all this kind of stuff in public policy and was a military police officer, United States Army veteran, and kind of a all-around interesting guy. I've never met him. Hmm. But I was talking to a gal the other day, and she said, oh, have you ever had Marcos on your show? I'm like, nope, don't even know anybody named Marcos. So,
well, you will.
Now we do.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, I posted his little bio for next week, and we will also have Sheriff Mike Johnson, the Shasta County Sheriff, on, at which point we will probably talk about his opponent, John Green, who took money from a cannabis cartel in Shasta Lake City in 2018.
In case anybody didn't know that.
Yeah, in case I didn't find any other opportunities to work that in. Yeah, and honestly, I'll post, that was posted last week. So if you don't think that's true, it's right there on his 460 filings. And I'm not sure how you run for sheriff if you take money from marijuana industry. That doesn't make sense, especially in an area that's overrun with marijuana cartels. So those couple of things are there. Might as well pick those scabs early and move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to our friend Dr. Chen. He is always a wealth of information. And so we thought, you know, we haven't talked to him since February. I think it's the longest spell we've ever had where we didn't chat with him. But with all the stuff that's going on and we're hearing about people being locked in buildings and all sorts of things, who better than Dr. Chen to come on and give us the 411? So good afternoon, Dr. Chen.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
I don't know where you want to start on this train wreck.
All right. Yeah. Well, I start with hello to both of you. Long time no talking.
Look at that. How polite you are. We just like roll right into it. But, yeah, I looked. I couldn't believe it. I thought, I haven't talked to him since February. I went back. I checked the archives. No, true. Haven't talked to you since February. Crazy.
Yeah. So I think let's start with the crisis, the pandemic crisis in China. Of course, this whole thing starts with China back in late 2019, even though the Chinese authority denied that. You know, they put the earlier date as, you know, 2020, January 2020, but you know, it started out in fall of 2019. And then there are ironclad zeroing out policy got China back to production earlier than the rest of the world in 2020 and also some part of the 2021. But now the crisis has gone back to China. While the rest of the world is slowly getting out of it through both successful development of some vaccines, certainly more successful than what China has, but also the more tolerant you know pandemic strategy, more humane, basically allowing the community immunity to take over. And so the rest of the world are easing out on pandemic policies, but China is pushing it to an extreme, even more, you know, severe or more draconian than when it first started out in Wuhan.
Why do you think that is?
Right. Okay. So. It is. I haven't seen people talking about this, okay? The way I see it, it is two crises in one. It's not just one crisis. And this is, if I can get this across in this show, it will be a success, okay? It is not a single crisis, but two crises. Right? And the second one is the one that has been overlooked. But there are forces behind it. The first crisis, of course, is the zeroing out strategy, which is totally unnecessary because the Omicron is not as deadly, not even close. It is very fast spreading. Right? It's so fast that there's no way you can overcome it by social distancing or by locking down, because it just spread so fast. And it is, there's not a clear explanation scientifically how that works yet, but it is very fast. But it is also very benign in a way compared to the original pandemic. The death rate of Omicron is actually less or about the same as flu. Right? So, you know, there's no need to lock down the city for a clue, or giving shot. So for a flu, right? But here's the first crisis, right? It is the crisis for the communism. It's a political system. It's self-claimed advantage over democracy. Right? Because I mentioned that back in 2020, in part of 2021, the Chinese communist regime used, you know, ironclad lockdown to forcibly slow down the spread of the pandemic, right? At the cost, right? At great cost of the general public, right? But it got China back to manufacturing ahead of other major nations. Right? So that gave the communist dictators a false sense that, well, actually, even if it's not false, they're going to claim it anyway, right? Because they're known to do that. Okay? But anyway, Xi Jinping, the head of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, claimed that pandemic has caused the East rising and the rise of the East and the descent of the West, meaning, you know, China has gone ahead than the free world, that the West has gone downhill and China is moving up. Right? So he claimed the history and had a celebration, a meeting celebrating China's successful victory over COVID-19. Right? So that is done. That's chiseled in stone. Now the pandemic is coming back. Right? So challenging all those previous claims. Right? So there's a phase that the CCP cannot allow itself to lose. Right? It, regardless how, you know, low the death rate is, how not as threatening as the original version, the current Omicron, not even close to the original COVID-19 version, right? Just to show that that China's or the communist approach of fighting the pandemic is superior than the free world. And the CCP made a political decision, right, that it has to stick to its policy so as to show its political correctness or political advantage over the free world. So that is unnecessary. So that was crisis number one, that a unnecessary locking down of a city. But there's a second crisis, made it a lot worse. Right? Locking down a city, meaning you shut down the production, you shut down a lot of things. But that doesn't mean you shut down people's livelihood. Right? That doesn't mean you need to shut down the supply to the city. Right? Now, the supply to the city never stopped. There are a lot of, Shanghai being the most important, the industrial base of China, account for, you know, Shanghai, last year, Shanghai was the only major metropolitan that have contributed positively to government's budgeting. Right? Every other city has drawn are in red. Right? The only exception is Shanghai. So many the central government organized a lot of the food or supply into Shanghai. But those were deliberately prevented or blocked from reaching the general public in Shanghai. So that is the second crisis. Now, who is doing that? That is the real question, right? Who is blocking that? A lot of food has been rotten, and some, they're just, the information is so extensive, so I don't want to go over them to overburden our audience, but they are just, you know, tweeters, there were TikTok, there are all kinds of videos showing that there was a deliberate interruption of food distribution. There were also officials who profit themselves, right? They monopolized the supply and then sell them. These are donated. So, your supply from other provinces and cities. Right? Yet they took control of them, letting most of them rot, and then they sell some of it at exorbitant prices. And so there was this concerted campaign against Shanghai people. Right? Who are doing this? Right? And this can only be those who are in the position to do this. Right? So these are the political enemy of Xi Jinping, the head of the CCP. So this is a political struggle between two factions within the CCP, with 26 million, or actually, with, you know, transmigrating people, there are probably over 30 million. With 30 million people at stake, right? They're doing this political fight with 30 million people's lives as, you know,
It's kind of crazy, but it's nice to know that even in a really hardcore dictatorship, you still wind up with factions. I think we have people in our country that think, you know, if only we had somebody iron-fisted in charge, you know, we'd cut back on all these little people who are squabbling about things. It's like, nah, no, not really. I guess as long as there are people in it, we're going to have that. Got to come back in just a second. Have to take a quick break. Our guest today is Dr. Shizong Chen. We are talking about China, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Yeah, make a move in one place and darned if it doesn't show up someplace else. So,
we were talking about the different factions.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. How do they How do they get to, I don't know what the hell, how I even want to ask the question, but how do you manage having another faction in a country like China run by the CCP? Like, is it the CCP factions?
CCP. Right. the factions within the CCP
seems almost impossible.
Has always been a fact.
Right? Okay.
And cutthroat political fight inside the CCP is a lot more than the open two-party or several-party competition in the free world. Right? It is like mafia, right? So mafia supposed to be a gang, right? Yet within mafia, the cutthroat murder and it's much worse than outside people would know, right? So, and the CCP is the world's most vicious gang. So this particular faction fight, right, has actually exist for the past 10 years, right? Start 2000, but its root actually rooted back in 1999, the persecution of Falun Gong. So this brings up an unusual concept that not many people would understand in the free world, and this is the issue of the political legacy, right? The CCP political legacy. So, that the so-called political legacy, right? When we say political legacy, we usually take that as a positive thing, right? But inside the CCP, it is the opposite. A political issue can be defined, a practical definition would be a political maneuver for which the leader feared others would fall him for. Or a Achilles heel of a leader's governor, right, or his political career. So first of all, to be in a position to leave behind a political legacy is not easy. So far, throughout the past close to 100 years, right now it's over 100 years of a Communist Party existing in China, there were only four CCP leaders that have been in the position to leave behind political legacy. The number one, the first one is what we know as Chairman Mao, right? Mao Zedong. And his political legacy is a cultural revolution, right? Towards his late years, he knew, he talked about it actually. He said his political career would be defined by two things. The first one is getting the CCP into power, and he never worried about that. Right? And the second issue was his launching of the Cultural Revolution, right? The infamous one. Right? So it was the second one he was worried the most. Right? And then he spent his last 20 years fighting to defend that legacy. Right? Just to defend his legacy, he deposed two of his heir apparent. First one, General Lin Biao, many people may not even know the name, and then Deng Xiaoping, a lot of people know about. Deng Xiaoping was the reformer, supposedly. Right? We which I don't quite agree anyway. And the reason he deposed of them was because Mao did not completely trust their loyalty to the Cultural Revolution. Now, he doesn't doubt their loyalty to him personally, but he doubted that one day when he passed, if they will carry on or whether they will defend his Cultural Revolution policy. And he was right. His fear vindicated, because within a month of his death, right, his successors arrest his wife and his his former political loyalist, and turned terminated his Cultural Revolution policy. And then that was Mao, and then Deng Xiaoping had his political legacy, which is the June 4th massacre, and to defend that, he as well deposed those he didn't trust. Right? His personal friend, actually. Again, he does not, he didn't doubt their personal loyalty to him, but nonetheless, he doubted their loyalty to his June 4th massacre policy. And then the third one is Jiang Zemin, for his persecution of Falun Gong. The fourth one is Xi Jinping. Those are the four, among all CCP leaders, those are the four most powerful ones. Only when you're the most powerful one, you can make a mistake that will impact the nation so badly that it becomes, that they become Achilles heel for their political career or their political reputation. So Xi Jinping is the last one, right? And Xi Jinping had, if he was given the choice, he probably would make taking over Taiwan as his political legacy, right? If we have time, we'll come back to that, because that is impacted by the Russian-Ukraine war. But he unwisely take on the pandemic as his political legacy. The pandemic first happened in Wuhan. He wasn't even there. Right? Yet somehow he claimed he personally, which is not true, it cannot be possibly true. He wasn't even there, but he claimed to have personally directed, planned, directed, administered the handling of the pandemic. Right? And so that becomes his liability. Right? Of course, as I said earlier, China was out of was able to resume manufacturing ahead of other nations based on its draconian lockdown policy. But that was under the background of a very dangerous COVID-19. Right? Now it's a different virus. So Omicron is a benign virus. You will still have symptoms, but they're much lighter, much, much less deadly. Right? Yet to insist on his previous wisdom, so-called wisdom of the lockdown, he ordered the current lockdown. Now, Jiang's faction, on the other hand, worried about its political policy. persecuting the Falun Gong. And the successor of Jiang was Hu Jintao, and the successor of Hu Jintao is Xi Jinping now. So those two leaders, right, did not actively implement Jiang's persecution of Falun Gong. So Jiang was never comfortable with, or the whole faction was never comfortable with Xi and with Hu. And not only that, to fend off Jiang faction's pressure, in his first term, Xi Jinping carried on a major anti-corruption campaign against Jiang's faction, because Jiang's faction is the most corrupted faction ever, even within CCP. That is the most corrupted faction.
What do you have to do to be the most corrupted? I mean, like how do you get that award? It just seems like the whole thing is super corrupt. How do you even sort out, like, who's doing more than the next guy?
Because they have turned everything in China, what I call a power ownership. I have introduced this concept in this show once before, but this is again something that I think international scholars have missed. Right? Jiang has promoted what I say is systematic corruption under his rule, that whoever loyal to him will be given all the opportunity to make all kinds of money, right? And whoever opposed him would be demoted or even persecuted, right? And so he created his power base by promoting corruption, right? Under other leaders, there are terrible leaders in the history, okay? And they have used personal award or a personal favor to recruit those who are loyal to them, right? But Jiang is different in that he institutionalized corruption as a way to climb up the political ladder, because he only trusts those who are corrupted, right? Those who are not corrupted, he didn't trust, because he thinks those leaders, those officials who have some conscience, will not listen to him. Right? Well, any people who have conscience will have their own mind, maybe. Right? Only the most corrupted will obey to him absolutely. And so that is why that is most corrupted.
Well, that says a lot about your regime when you only trust the corrupted officials and not the uncorrupted officials.
Yeah, when you're separating your corruption into different piles, that's like
as to who you can trust.
I just had a really non sequitur thought. You know, it's like trick or treating, and everybody gives you green jelly beans, and you got to sort out which green jelly beans are worse than the other ones. We all know that's not possible. Got to take a quick break again. This is happening so frequently. It's like every 20 minutes. It's the craziest thing ever. It feels like every 20 minutes, doesn't it?
We'll have to watch the clock, see if that's true.
Yeah, nuts to Travis in there who's keeping track, giving us all the hand signs. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
see nothing wrong. Spreading myself around. Everybody's talking all this stuff about me.
Song all about rules. So fitting. So fitting. All the things you can't do. But the CCP doesn't probably have a theme song, do they? It seems a little too cheerful for them. That's the problem. No fun.
Let me give you an example closer to home.
Okay.
So you understand how corrupted that regime is, right? That faction is. Right? So, remember I talked about, generals of barbarism several times in this show. That is the invention of this faction, the Jiang faction.
Oh, the generous barbarism?
That faction is so corrupted that it was able to corrupt this country to beyond recognition now. Right?
So for the people who have not heard your example of the generous barbarism, give that to them, because I think it's something worth considering as we all have to buy things, and when we make those choices, I know a lot of times people say, well, I don't want to support, what's going on, but I thought that we never forgot that when you told us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, back in 1989, the CCP carried on the June 4th massacre, most people remember, right? And Jiang was the one that benefited the most from that massacre because he was promoted to the head of the CCP after the June 4th massacre. So that's background number one, right? And then background number two is on Christmas Day of 1991, the former Soviet Union formally declared it's dissolving, right? It's dissolving into 15 independent states or republics. Right? And so between 1989 to 1992, right, the Chinese Communist Party faced two crises. The number one is the crisis of legitimacy in governing, and it killed and murdered, massacred its own people, right, on June 4th. And then, with the world collapse of communism, its ideology is also in crisis. Right? So, at that moment, right, to survive communism, the CCP under this Jiang guy, right, this Jiang Zemin, then came up with this, what I call Janus Bobism. It claimed to the world, right, unlike previous dictators, unlike Hitler, unlike Stalin, the CCP under Zhao says, we will not threaten you. Not only we will not threaten you, we will benefit you. We'll be generous, right? We'll share our, national resources, our, big market, right? And you don't even have to sacrifice anything. You don't have to do anything. The only thing is, just look away, right? Just mind your own business. Don't speak up about what we do, right? And so it's a bribery, because people all over the world know how barbaric communism is. But that barbarism is only against the Chinese people. Right? For the people that it has no control yet, right? The CCP pretend to be very generous, right? Yes, they're particularly generous to the Wall Street, to the multinationals, right? And so this is a newer version of barbarism that the world did not know how to respond. And no government was able to resist the enticement. They all fall under that the huge economic incentive in doing this with the CCP. And so one by one, they all compete for the CCP's economic favor. And therefore, looking away from what happened in China, even now, right, maybe worse now. Right? Well, I know it's worse now. Right? And so that corrupted the Western's principles and values. No other regime was able to do that before. The USSR was not able to do it. Right? Hitler was not able to do it. No regime was able to do it. Right? But nowadays, and most Americans do not even know they have been invaded by the CCP. Let me give you a very easy comparison. This country is supposed to be a free country, that you're allowed to, speak your mind. You're allowed to support this or oppose the other, right? But when it comes to China, when it comes to the CCP, those who do not criticize the CCP will be able to make money both in the U.S. as well as inside China. China is a big market, and the CCP controls that. Right? CCP can, open its faucet, and then you get your bucket full. Okay, and if the CCP decided to not do business with you, cannot make money in China. So that cuts a line there in the United States, that those who show discontent or criticism towards CCP's dictatorship will not get to make money in China. And those who do not criticize the CCP will be able to make money both in China and in the United States. In a competitive economy, a slight advantage will over time, we all know, will lead to, big difference. But in this case, with CCP, you know, giving out economic favor, those who support China will have major advantage over its competitors. So in this way, the free economy in this country is already manipulated or impacted or influenced by CCP already. Right? So those who do not speak against the CCP will build up their political cash or their economic power quickly over those who criticize CCP. And no wonder this country will adopt the policies that will benefit the CCP. And so in a way, CCP has changed our political system as well as our economic lives in a way that most people do not even recognize. And this is just a simple example. My colleagues and I, we have a team that have done systematic research in this. So our articles will be published, one after another. So we are in the process of publishing many of those. So this will come out soon. So once I get those, I'll send to your way.
Oh, good.
Okay.
But
then
post them. Yeah. That is how China has changed its country dramatically, right? In a way that has never happened before, and we don't even know about it, right? And now, let me go back to Shanghai's crisis, right? The most corrupted faction of the Jiang faction actually is responsible for the second crisis, for cutting the supply to Shanghai, for making life miserable to Shanghai people. And the goal is to cause discontent, both domestically and, more importantly, or more powerfully, not necessarily more important, but more powerfully, international resentment towards the other faction, the Xi faction, because locking down Shanghai causes a major breakdown of supply chain from China. Right? So many companies, particularly those multinationals on the Wall Street, will then want to unseat the first faction, the Xi faction, and get Jiang's faction back to their old times when generous barbarism runs the day. Right? That was before 2012. Wall Street had its honeymoon, or actually honey years. Honey years in the bed with Jiang's faction. And this country is about to make another major mistake in trying to get that faction back in power. This is particularly dangerous for the United States because the quickest way to lose God's blessing is to side with Satan. And Jiang faction is the worst enemy of humanity. And the Wall Street and the deep state are right now pushing for that. And this is what this is what's behind the Shanghai crisis and others dealing out policy or crisis in China, and I think maybe we can talk more about this in the second hour. But here is the greatest danger for the United States. It, dealing with Jiang once before has already caused great damage to this country, and I think we are at the danger of repeating that.
Now we're going to do it again.
I hope that doesn't come true.
All right. We will chat about that next hour. Our guest is Dr. Shezong Chen. You are listening to We the People, and we will be back with you after the news. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the end of the world.